The Fiction of Dory Sanders, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me for part 7 of New Southerners, a continuing series of programs spotlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. Dory Sanders is here now to read from and talk about her books, Clover and Her Own Place.
I grew up in a totally segregated society. And in our little farming community called Philbert, South Carolina, we had two schools and two churches, a cotton gin and a general store and a few packing sheds for peaches. And I grew up in that world. And today that's not so. I'm fascinated by the change because I am able, you see, to see both sides of it.
Novelist Dory Sanders. She'll be back in just a moment to read from and talk about her books. This program is made possible by a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. Dory Sanders lives on a peach farm in York County, South Carolina. When she's not on duty at the family farm, however, you can probably find her at work on a new book. Dory Sanders is here now with part 7 of New Southerners, a continuing series of programs highlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. So far, we've heard from Alan Gerganus, Larry Brown, Tim McLaurin, Lee Smith, Clyde Edgerton, and Jill McCorkle. Each presents the fresh perspectives of a new generation of Southern writers observing the encounter between the Old South and the New, between the Modern South and the rest of the country. But Dory Sanders is among the most unusual of the new crop of Southern writers on the scene today. She truly is a person of the earth. During peach season, with members of her family, she runs the Sanders Roadside Peach Shed. So it's not surprising that she writes about farm life from World War II up to the present. But her subjects also include mixed marriages and racial identity, local belief and superstition, friendship and alienation, youth and old age, innocence and experience. In her two novels, Clover and Her Own Place, Dory Sanders writes about race in the contemporary South. But she does so in such a way that color recedes into culture. In Sanders' first novel, Clover, a little black girl whose father is killed in a car crash decides to live with her white stepmother. In Sanders' second novel, Her Own Place, we follow May Lee Barnes in her journey from self-doubt to self-reliance. Dory Sanders begins part 7 of New Southerners now by reading from her first book, Clover.
They dressed me in white for my daddy's funeral. White from my head to my toes. I had the black skirt I bought at the $6 store, all laid out to wear. I'd even pull the black grosgrain bows off my black patent leather shoes to wear in my hair. But they won't let me wear black. I kind of think deep down in my heart that you're just well supposed to wear black to a funeral. Guess the reason my stepmama's not totally dressed in black is because she just plain doesn't know any better. My stepmama is wedged between me and my Uncle Jim Ed, squeezed in between us on a crowded bench, just like vanilla cream between dark chocolate cookies. My daddy is dead, stretched out in a fancy coffin right before my very eyes. And all I can think about, all I can think of, is an Oreo cookie. My stepmama's body is as straight as a cone stalk. She's not crying. We sit side by side, as stiff as painted leaves on a painted tree. My Uncle Jim Ed puts his hand on my stepmama's arm. But me and my stepmama, we don't talk. But then I'm not crying either. They say I haven't shed a single tear since my daddy died. Not even when the doctor told me he was dead. They say I was just a scared, dry-eyed little girl gazing into the eyes of a doctor, unable to hold back his own tears. I stood there, they said, humming some sad little tune. I don't remember all of that. I sure do remember, though, why I was down at that county hospital. My daddy had been in a terrible automobile accident. My daddy was dead.
Dory, tell me about your history as a writer. I know that this is an enormously complicated story, but I want you to give me a sense of how a peach farmer in South Carolina came to write novels about race and gender and class in the modern American South.
Well, it certainly wasn't a conscious effort to do it. It's just that I had this little habit of writing little things down on little pieces of paper. Mm-hmm. Someone happened to see something like written down. And so she says, oh, you can write. And I thought to myself, yeah, sure, as a younger person would say. And that person kept pushing me, prompting me to try to write and get published. I decided after a little bit of urging from that woman and that I'd give it a try just to prove her wrong. And then she wouldn't keep saying, write. Uh-huh. And then I was published in the process. Can you believe that?
Now, you wrote Clover, or was it a section, something imaginative that you had come up with before Clover? You sent it off to a publisher in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Yeah.
You get a package back in the mail, and it sits where for how long?
Well, just hidden sort of like under the edge of my old bed where I put things out of sight for about 8 months, and then I didn't open it up.
Were you afraid to open this up? You thought it was a letter of rejection.
I thought, well, it was actually in a sense because the whole manuscript was there.
Uh-huh.
And so when I opened it up, there was a wonderful letter that was there. They were turning it down, sure, but they were telling me that I had some potential.
Uh-huh. Now, is this what led to Clover?
That's what led to Clover.
Tell me about this little girl. Tell me where Clover came from. Tell me how you created this situation. I would say, 20, 30 years ago, the situation that you have here, a little black girl who's about to be raised by a white woman.
Exactly.
That's really bizarre. it may fly in the 90s, but, you know, when you were a kid, it certainly wouldn't have been possible. Tell me about her.
But you see now, that's what observation will do for you. And I think a writer observes and sees everything. You see a situation. You see a little black girl. You see a white woman. You see them in similar circumstances, as it was in this, just in funeral groups passing by. And you allow the what-ifs to seed your thinking.
Now, when you say passing by, you're talking about
your peach shed. And by the, with the funeral
On Highway, what is it?
321.
In South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
People I didn't even know. I didn't know this little girl. A little girl I decided to call Clover.
Uh-huh.
A white woman that I'd never, ever known in my life, probably will never see again. I decided to name her Sarah Kate.
Uh-huh.
But I was just funeral watching one day, and there was a little girl in one, as far as I could see, a totally black funeral group looked out at me over at my peach shed in the open air along a busy highway.
Uh-huh.
She waved. I waved back.
And you thought, what in the world is that kid doing there?
Didn't think of much about it until later on. There was yet another funeral group procession that was slowly passing by. The county police car with the blue light flashing on and on. The cars moving at a pace that was almost turtle-like.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman in that group that looked out at me. She was white. We made eye contact, but we didn't wave. But it just struck me, it seemed, that here are two sets of people, black and white, sharing a common theme, death. I thought about how universal it was. No matter how much money a person might have, no matter who you are, if you live long enough, you're going to know about death. And I think it would have its same sadness and its same effect. The what if seeded my mind.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't handle it. I thought, what if that woman wound up with that little girl? Could they make a life together?
And there's the imaginative beginning of little Clover.
Exactly.
And her relationship with her. Do you call Sarah Kate her stepmother?
Yes.
All right. Now, one of the things that goes on in this book, Dory, is that skin color is not so much the important thing as the kind of cultural raw edges that these people experience when they bump up against one another. I don't think that you have anybody in this book who is thinking racist thoughts or behaving in a bad fashion, but you have people who are, they don't understand, why does this woman not put her sugar in her
exactly.
iced tea in the way that I do? Is that what race relations are all about in the
to
South
me,
these days?
Selling alongside a busy highway with people who come, the thing that divides grits, anyone from Mimosa, that hinges on whether or not you like grits, okra, crowder peas, skillet cornbread, uh-huh. and whether or not you put sugar in your iced tea. Uh-huh. If you don't do that, I start to look at you kind of strange. And it's not who you are, it's what you are not. You're not a lover of the foods of the South. So I find that it is indeed cultural and culinary differences that so divide.
Would you say, Dory Sanders, that in your books you are, what, preaching to us about how you want the South to be, how things have changed and will continue to change in the South? What's the difference between fact and fiction here?
I hope not. I hope I don't sound preachy and sermonizing. I hope that in my work of fiction, I can just address issues and things. Not that I made a conscious effort necessarily to do it, because in Clover, when I first wrote a book that reviewers have said makes a strong statement about the barriers between blacks and whites, that was not a conscious effort on my part.
You were just writing about what you knew.
About people. Right. People learning to live and get along together. People knowing that if you can't cook grits, you're going to have a hard row to hoe in South Carolina. And that's how it all started. So if indeed those things are mentioned, it all falls in the line of creating a work of fiction.
Speaking of creating and creativity, how does that process work for you, Dory? Now, I realize that's a big order. You can't sort of just spit it out in 25 words or less. But when you create a little girl like Clover or an older lady like Maylee Barnes, do you talk to yourself in their voices? And give me a concrete sense of what goes through your mind.
I do in their voices. I hear them in my head. But most of all, for young people today, I listen. I watch them. I listen to their sentences. They say things like, well, and like, you know, like, well, like, and I think this is their way uh-huh. of expressing themselves. Their sentences are clipped and short. And I think about that and I listen. I listen to older people too. It's no problem for an older woman for me. I listen to myself. I'm not saying that the South is I'm trying to present a Pollyanna bright in the corner wherever you are situation here.
Right.
I think that I address life how it really should be addressed perhaps at times, but I personally don't have a bone to pick because, you see, I grew up as a farmer, and I just remember all through the times where there were some problems that we heard about. I had a wonderful father that had 10 children, and he said this to us, never ever blame one person for someone else's mistakes. And he meant by that, by not going back and trying to conjure up in your heart all this hatred that people think you should have, mm-hmm. and you don't really have a legitimate reason to have it, but just because you think somebody thinks you should have it, don't do it. Because he said to his 10 children, I will never, ever punish you collectively as a group because of what one person may have done. Mm-hmm. He said, I will find out. If I don't find out, then you'll go unpunished. But sooner or later, that guilty party will come forth. So he was saying that to say this. If the man up the road was kind to me, don't blame him for a mistake. His father may have made.
Dory, this is evidence for the stories that we hear about how a paradox in American culture that race relations have advanced farther and faster in the South, where they were once worse than anywhere else in the country, than they have in our other modern regions of the United States.
Maybe it's because we have so many farmers there. And let me tell you, we're a different group.
you all have to get along, don't you?
Yes, because we depend on each other. Uh-huh. Because we have a common force that divides us. And you know what that is? The weather.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth. But we do work together. Now, if anything happens on our farm, we go to the next farmer. And he'll come help us. But if he calls on us, we will do the same. And there are black and white farmers in the area.
I want you to read a passage from, let me see here, Dory. I'm going to ask you to read from Her Own Place. And this is a passage where Maylee is reflecting on what she's going through as a volunteer at a local hospital. And she's meditating on what separates her and what binds her to the community. Will you read this for me?
Yes. The house was new, but an old person lived in it. You see, there were all the visible signs. A young person would have followed the carefully balanced landscape plan of the builder. But for this house, the flowers and shrubbery were carted in from the old place. Plants planted like Browning snapshots in a poorly arranged old photo album. A little ragged around the edges and straggly, just like orphan plants with their support systems removed. The plants were very much like the owner of the house, a woman named Maylee Barnes. Her children had grown up surrounding her, grown up like plants in a carefully tended perennial bed, but they'd now removed themselves and left visible the now uneven edges of her life. After Maylee Barnes finally gathered up enough courage at the urging of her son to volunteer down at the hospital, perhaps the single thing that bothered her most about the ladies down there in the group was the notion they had in their head that she knew every black person in the county. She didn't. True, she did know who most of the black patients' people were, but usually the people themselves were not her personal acquaintances. Betha Petty must have asked her a dozen times if she knew Sally Jean and Tulsa Davis. Of course she knew them. She knew them all right and enough. And if she didn't, she would have had to know them anyhow, because at least every week one of their children would wind up in the hospital. Every single solitary week. There were 9 of those children. Neither one of them, Sally nor Tulsa, had a job. Seemed that they should have had time to take better care of them children. But they didn't.
Dory, you've just read to us here from her own place, and you've read to us here about Maylee, your main character in that novel. Where did Maylee come from? Is that you? Is it your life we're hearing here?
Well, just bits and pieces here and there, but certainly a lot of Dory Sanders there. Uh-huh. Because you see, there's that farming part of it. And that, I think, is every farming woman's life, sort of, that's represented through this woman, Maylee. And I hope there's a strength there.
Uh-huh.
It's now, after years of struggling to raise her children, she's already acquired her land. She has her little place in a sense of physical things.
Uh-huh.
But now she's kind of carved out a place for her in the world, a place where she will be able to find satisfaction to give of herself. And at the urging of her son, Maylee Barnes agrees to volunteer and give a part of herself back to the community, back to others. That's what throws her in with the white ladies, the auxiliary helpers, the hospital auxiliary.
Mm-hmm. Of all the characters that you have created, we've the two that stayed in my mind are Maylee Barnes and Little Clover, but you've got dozens of other people that cross these pages.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite?
I think perhaps among some of my favorites might be in Clover, there's a woman named Eveline.
Eveline is Clover's aunt.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And this woman makes such a conscious effort to sell her peaches even when they're damaged. And in that way, there's Dory Sanders. Because you see, I just quickly tell peaches when they make fun of my peaches, they say little, or they complain, I didn't make those peaches, I hurriedly explain. And it's true. So that is one of my favorite characters there. And I guess in her own place, I'm drawn a little or a lot to a man who enters Maylee Barnes' life. A man named Fletcher Owens.
Now, this is the man who comes to rent the room.
To rent the room.
From Maylee.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And a man who, in time, she starts to feel that she likes his stories.
Now, I think it's fair to say, Dory, that in your views and in the way you write about race relations in the South, you are the soul of humility and gentility. There is a wonderful, marvelous, humane sense about these characters. And yet, the question remains, is race the unbridgeable gap? Is that the kind of thing that's always going to separate us? Are you optimistic about the harmony of the races in our modern South?
Well, now, that brings me back to how I was born and raised up, you see. Raised up in a totally segregated society. Raised up where the barriers were more pronounced than they are now, but yet raised up in a setting where people didn't have it as terrible as many people might see it. Uh-huh. You see, I'm a farmer, surrounded even today by white farmers in the area as well. And there is a difference. Farmers do tend to bond and come together better than most people see from the outside.
So we're back to not so much racial differences as cultural differences.
Cultural. And so since everybody in my community, both black and white, like grits anyway, we didn't have any trouble getting somebody to help us if there was a storm impending. But that's how it happened, you see. Here was my daddy on our land. I was born and raised on our own land, lived on that my whole life. But yet, if there was a farmer over from us that was racing to get a crop in, if we were finished, we had to help. We didn't get paid. But we went to help that farmer, white or black, and they would have done the same for us. And can you believe that's the way it works down to this day? Now, I'm not trying to speak for the rest of the country or the world. All I know is my little neck of the wood is a farming life in South Carolina, and that's the way it's always been.
Dori Sanders, we're talking about your books, Clover and Her Own Place. Let's talk about your audience. How do you think about the people that you write these books for? Do they affect you? Do they change the way you conduct your life as a writer?
I would hope that that would never, ever happen. And I don't think it has. Because for those who may not fully understand my procedure or my manner of working in fiction, I try to rely on something that a wonderful editor said to me once. A writer should try to write what seems right for them. Tell their own story. And then allow the world to come to grips with what they've written.
But you enjoy talking to your readers. I mean, you obviously have great fun on these book tours.
Well, that's because my readers have been very wonderful to me. And my books have been well received. Uh-huh. And that is what makes me just glow.
How about the critics? Do you read the critical reviews and take all of that to heart?
I do. Mm-hmm. And when they are a little bit hard or something, I'll say, well, come over to my page shed one day and you'll see that this is real. I say that to myself. But I never, ever write back or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Because I figure that what I'm saying is a new way of life for them. They may not see it the way that it actually is there. And that doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt when I've received so many wonderful reviews. I figure you have to take the rejection along with everything else. A farmer gets accustomed to that.
Dori Sanders, what do you want from your writing? Is at one level, I suppose, you could say, well, it's something of an ego trip. At another level, you could say, I'm trying to make money. At a third level, you could say, I'm just trying to show people the way I live. How does all of that work? I mean, do you have a particular ambition when you think of yourself as a writer?
No, it's just that I think of myself as a person who just rightly can't help themselves for writing. Because even after the first book, I tried to stop and I couldn't. The thoughts, they just keep seeding my head. And the ideas just keep flowing. And before I know it, I'm writing something on a little piece of paper. But I am consciously working on a cookbook, farm style cooking, back then and now, because I found a lot of little scribble recipes from a very, very old aunt. And I have been working with one of my sisters to try to put them in some sort of reasonable order. And we've tested them, and some of them are coming out pretty good.
Do they have a lot to do with peaches, for example?
A lot to do with peaches. And an awful lot to do with the seasonal foods, the wild foods. Mm-hmm. Because we used to go through the fields to find them in the spring. It was what we call creasy green or field cress and poke salad, a pokeweed, P-O-K-E. Uh-huh. Oh, it's so good. And then in the fall, they're the persimmons, and in the early spring, they're the mulberries. We have a variety of wild things that we eat.
It's wonderful to hear you talk this way, because it's a window into the wonderful, palpable, concrete kinds of images and experiences that go on in your books. Not only human relations, but the local color, so to speak. That is to say, what
you.
People eat and the way they dress and the way they talk to one another.
Once people begin to make, a conscious effort to get to know one another, find out, what are you about? Address cultural differences And oh, they play a most important role. Look at them and realize this person is different because they were raised differently from the way I was raised.
So it's not, again, it's not a question of skin color so much as it is just being down the block a little
bit. I have a lot of wonderful customers who stop by my peach shed that wouldn't bit more kill a spider than 40 going north. And I look at them, well, what am I going to do? But yet, I find that because of their reverence for life, and I find that, hey, that little spider doesn't deserve to be crushed, I'm beginning to pull back from some of my earlier thinking and ways. And every time I capture a spider and release him into the grass, I say, hoo-hoo, someone's influence is rubbing off on me. And that's how it goes. So, yes, I'm very optimistic because I think it does boil down to that. Not too optimistic on the food, though, because I think if you're not eating Southern, I'm not sure we're going to come over to eat the things that some people like. Because Southern cooking is good. Plain good.
Dori Sanders is the author of two novels, Clover and Her Own Place, both available from Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Dori Sanders is at work now on a fictional account based on the life of her father and on a South Carolina cookbook. The program is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In just a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like to have an audio cassette of this week's show. You've been listening to Part 7 of New Southerners, a continuing series of programs highlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. My guest was novelist Dori Sanders. Upcoming installments of New Southerners will feature Kay Gibbons, Tina McElroy Ansa, Randall Keenan, Brent Wade, and Robert Olin Butler. For a cassette tape of this program, send $10 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 711. That's program number 711, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code again is 27709. The music you heard on this edition of Soundings is from an album entitled The Devil's Dream and featured the Tarwater Band. This program was made possible by a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.